Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
Welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work, a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, hosted by me, Robbie Earle, and by my good friend, Kyle Schoenewill. Now, all week, we've been doing this little mini rewatch leading up to the premiere of Loki, which Kyle is 1 week from today.
Let's go.
Woo. So today is especially fun because we're continuing to march along, but the film that we get to watch today is truly one of my favorite Marvel films. I actually have it ranked at number 3 currently out of the entire MCU, which I know is maybe a hot take.
And I had it ranked at number 4. This is one of only a handful of movies that Robbie and I just 100% do not disagree on almost anything. Yep. It is truly a masterpiece. I say that for real. It would be one of the movies that I would show people if they've never seen anything in Marvel world. Mm-hmm. It's that funny. It's action-packed. It still has heart. There's very few qualms with it. And so I really remember enjoying our discussion on this movie. And if you remember, this was an episode that we had our special guest friend, Kyle Cousins, on the episode with us.
Yes, so, who dropped some knowledge.
Yes, brought the truth, I remember. So if you're getting tired of just Robbie and I's vocals, now you get a little change up here. So that's kind of fun.
Yep. Yeah, and like in the Dark World, this is another really, I would say, meaningful step for Loki. As we've been kind of talking about that, is he a villain? Is he the anti-hero? This is definitely him at his most kind of anti-hero. We still see some of those tendencies, but I would say this is more of the kind of mischievous Loki. I mean, even from the very get-go, it's funny because some people, I think, maybe take issue with this, that the Dark World ends so sinisterly for Loki. Like, we think he's going to do something really kind of dastardly now that he has the throne. And it's funny because as part of what Taika's doing with the whole Thor mythos, that almost immediately goes out the window. I mean, once we come in, you know, he's not, you don't show up and it's like he's, you know, enslaved the whole population and Asgard's burning or anything. It's like he's just putting on dumb plays to prop up his own ego.
A scene that I think portrays what we've been talking about so clearly to me is the famous battle where Friends from Work actually came from between Hulk and Thor. If you remember, Loki is watching it from the top. And I'm watching him watch it, and I'm thinking to myself, like, again, what is his motivation here? When he cheers for the Hulk smashing Thor, I know it's because of the joke from the Avengers, right? The tie there where it's like, that's what it feels like. But I can't figure out in the moment, is he truly cheering for like Thor to lose? Like when Hulk does the Hulk smash, he walks away like, okay, Thor's going to die. And that's okay. Like I'm
right.
So I'm like, is he still wanting to kill Thor? But then like later he clearly is helping. And when they have the conversation in the elevator, he's like, again, showing that anti-hero thing where it's like almost regret that Thor doesn't want him to be with him right before trying to betray him again with the ship. So
yeah, that's true. I mean, because you're right. You you do get those moments before he knows it's the Hulk too, where he's like, you know, I haven't seen this champion they talk about, but I hear that he's like horrifying.
Right. But that comes right before he's trying to talk Thor out of doing anything to save his life. I just never know what he's doing. And I think that's the point.
Yeah. Yeah. He is a morally ambiguous fellow. I think in some ways this is the movie that I'm most interested to see whether they follow up with in Loki, because this is the one where I would say we get the most development of the character and like really see him grow. I mean, there are even the lines in the movie where they talk about that on sort of a meta level. And to your point, on Monday, is this something that Loki is going to be made privy to? Like, is he going, you know, sort of like at the end of Endgame, Nebula kind of just tells Gamora what's happened to this alternate version of her. So it's like she hasn't experienced it, but it's enough to make her kind of swap sides and move away from Thanos and fight with the Avengers. It's like, is that, are we going to get a moment like that where someone is like, this is what you became ultimately before you died? Or is there some way that these events are recollected? That's one of those bigger question marks for me as we're moving forward.
No doubt.
Before we get into the movie, we do have another edition of the hip comic Robbie's Recommended Reading heading into Loki. Yesterday, we talked a bit about the Kieran Gillen take on Loki. Again, it's really fun because like what we said in that JMS story, that's the introduction of female Loki, which has kind of become a fan favorite and sort of starting to open up this world of different alternate versions of this character that we've only really known in one context until then. Here in the comic we talked about yesterday, we actually get this little kid Loki, which is really interesting because that there's an inherent kind of innocence there, and it's a Loki that's not burdened with the past of the other Loki. Like, it's sort of new memories, a new personality to some degree, but still kind of like the god of mischief. And so kind of what we were talking about with Thor, like with the sort of baby face version of him, is what does that mean? What does that look like? That bleeds over really well into the Young Avengers book, also by Kieran Gillen. And this is one that I would recommend in general, just because we're seeing a lot of signs in the MCU that they're trying to adapt Young Avengers. A lot of the characters that show up on that team are showing up in kind of various spaces, and a lot of people are projecting that that's going to be one of the next projects announced. And Loki plays a pretty prominent role on that team here. Gillen, again, is another one of my favorite writers, and he does an excellent job. But you also see Loki kind of take that next step up to... He kind of magically ages up a bit to where he's more sort of like teenager, young adult, and less like kid. But it's more of that kind of struggle that we've been talking about of who he really is. So I think that's a great read for you if you're a Loki fan, if you're getting ready for the show, but also just if you're trying to kind of get caught up on what's going on in the MCU. So as always, go to hipcomic.com/FFW. Search Young Avengers by Kieran Gillen and Jamie McKelvey. I think that there's an omnibus there you can get. Again, you can get all those in single issues if you want. You can either buy them or maybe be on the lookout for an auction. Either way, it's a great way to get your comics really conveniently online without having to leave your home while still supporting the local comic book shops that we love so much.
Totally. So visit hipcomic.com. But in the meantime, don't forget, while you're listening to the upcoming Ragnarok episode, you can always message us your thoughts live while you're listening at the FFW Podcast on social media or the FFWpodcast.com. We look forward to hearing from you. And without further ado, here is our edition of Thor Ragnarok.
Thor Ragnarok was released in the fall of 2017. It was released before Black Panther and after Spider-Man Homecoming. It is directed by Taika Waititi, who we will undoubtedly talk about in a moment. It was written by Eric Pearson, Craig Kyle, and Christopher Yost, which is interesting because Christopher Yost actually wrote with Marcus and McFeely on Thor: The Dark World. So he's the only, you know, kind of creative holdover from that movie other than the cast and Feige, obviously. And he's been on a few Marvel projects in various capacities. Eric Pearson is actually credited as writing the screenplay for Black Widow. So that makes me kind of more excited about Black Widow in some ways, because obviously we really like this movie. Although one thing that I'm excited to talk about is the degree to which this movie was improv'd, which makes me kind of wonder how much the script really mattered at all. We have, you know, a fantastic cast here. Chris Hemsworth, Tom Hiddleston coming back. We have Kate Blanchett just killing it as Hela, Jeff Goldblum, Tessa Thompson, Carl Urban, Mark Ruffalo, Anthony Hopkins, and we have Idris Elba, who we're wishing all of the best since he has been tested positive for coronavirus.
Bummer.
Hoping he's doing well. And finally, we have just a really great score from Mark Mothersbaugh. It's one of my favorites. And an example of, which I think we don't see that often, an example of a composer coming in late in a franchise and really incorporating what's been done before and kind of perfecting it. Really, I think what he does with the score mirrors in a lot of ways what Taika does with this movie. No doubt. It's fun to see that.
So Kyle and I have a mutual friend, shout out to Micah Cool, who a year ago texted me when he saw this movie and said, quote, "Is it fair to say this is the most complete movie in the MCU?" And that's kind of where I want to start, because it's really stinking close. And I don't think you can watch this movie without seeing some of the comparisons that have to be made to Guardians of the Galaxy 1. Is that fair?
100%.
I think that's absolutely fair.
This movie is so good, but I wonder how much of it could have existed without that movie existing first. Just because the colors and the planets and all the things we praised Guardians for, it's here again. And this is kind of a mind-expanding reinventing of Thor in the same way that Guardians kind of opened up the galaxy to us. And I just think the way Taika handled this, Taika Waititi, the director, was flawless.
No disagreement there from me. I mean, we'll get into the details of where that lands, especially with him. But just as we're starting broad, the movie, like Robbie already alluded to, musically, sonically, visually, is much like Guardians, where it gives us, and even more so because it's working with a franchise that already existed in like the darker, paler tones, somber, I don't know what word you guys would use, operatic type music.
Gritty.
To what we get with this, as one review said, a Duran Duran music video, just, you know, music, bombastic, like colors and a completely different vibe, which is just awesome.
Taika is so quirky as a person, and you just feel his influence on this movie so much, almost to as big of extent as any other film in the MCU.
100%. So I'll give another shout out. We've already referred to one. It's going to be shout out, like hashtag Holland Christian High School Day. but so Micah Cool, another friend of ours who Micah, Kyle, and I know, Robbie does not, sadly, is a guy by the name of Brett Wiersma. So Brett is that guy, like you think of Morgan Freeman's character in Shawshank Redemption, the guy who can get stuff. Brett Wiersma is my guy who can introduce me to stuff. And since I met Brett freshman year of high school, he's always been that guy to introduce me to like fringe directors, movies, comedy series, things that are either not popular yet or will never be popular. And he's never steered me wrong. And even with music, he's done that.
Wow.
And Taika Waititi was one of those guys. And so Brett is responsible for turning me on first to Hunt for the Wilder People. So let me back up a second for our audience. I'm a huge Taika Waititi fan. And so I'm going to give you some movie titles of things he's done before he was really super well known. And would encourage you to go watch some of these. But one of them is Hunt for the Wilder People. Another is What We Do in the Shadows, which is
so
a very
funny.
Weird, it's technically called a vampire mockumentary but it's basically like a vampire is doing a documentary on what their life is like, what living in New Zealand would be like, which is where Taika's from. In 2010, he did a movie called Boy. And then more famously and more recently, a lot of people are aware of Jojo Rabbit that Taika did.
Unbelievable.
Oscar nominations, Oscar wins. But the point being, if you go back, even before Taika became well-known, he has done some really, really good stuff, character-driven stuff that is hilarious yet still meaningful. I called Hunt for the Wilder People Napoleon Dynamite with depth, if that makes any sense. So that's kind of like what infuses a lot of this movie. So as I was already a big fan of his, watching this movie, everything just clicked for me. I was like, yep, this is him. This is totally his vibe. And I just give him so, I could like talk about him and just his influence. And we will talk about some of where that landed in the movie, but I could talk about him for hours and how good of a director he is.
I've known Taika as a director and writer associated with Flight of the Conchords for a while.
Yes. Thank you. Thanks, Robbie.
In, like in terms of, you know, things that I've just loved for a long time that, you know, and people are very aware of Flight of the Conchords, but I remember like whenever I saw, cause I had not seen many of his movies. I'd seen What We Do in the Shadows, but whenever I saw his name associated with Thor Ragnarok, I was very intrigued and
sure.
And, you know, excited, but a bit like curious, I guess is a good word. Because
well, I'll say for fans of Flight of the Conchords, which I was, I didn't know that he had directed the series, the comedy series that they did. So when I saw his name, like you just said, I was like, whoa, no way. That's amazing.
Right. But it also makes so much sense.
But you were hesitant to see how it actually work, right? Because it is quirky. Like that doesn't seem like a fit necessarily on paper. Thor meets Taika.
Right. Right. And I think, you know, I think it's interesting because you could look at it, and this is a way that I think some diehard Marvel fans have looked at Ragnarok. I think that they're for sure in the minority. This seems to be a pretty well-loved movie. But I know some folks look at it as kind of making too much of a joke of Thor and making too much of a joke of maybe Hulk and making it too lighthearted.
Ooh, but I'm going to get riled up here.
I feel like what's really interesting is I think maybe my fear might have been coming into this that by steering too far in a different direction, it would have felt really discordant with what's come before. And, you know, like Kyle, you said that the tone is a shift and it is very much a breakthrough in the Thor franchise. But something that I was struck by on this watch is how
I
much
I love what you're about to say.
It still does pay service to the movies that come before,
yes,
to the character
totally.
that's been laid out in the films before, both in the Thor films and the Avenger films.
Yes.
It ties up some of these stories we've had. And I think that Taika deserves credit for that as well, you know?
Well, and they've always flirted with Thor being a funny character. That's what I realized on this entire rewatch is that Thor 1 is kind of funny. And Thor 2, they still try to be funny. And when Thor shows up in the other movies, he has funny lines, like even Age of Ultron. So him having a sense of humor in this movie, yes, it's dialed up and it's quirkier, but it's not totally out of left field like some people would say it is.
Exactly.
Robbie, I saw the same thread where fans were kind of criticizing, and the specific criticism was just even at the end, how they like ruined meaningful moments with humor. And I could not disagree more. I think when people say that, they missed it. I literally would look back and go, no, you didn't get it. Because what Taika does that I think is so brilliant, it's literally a masterclass in directing to me. And the more I researched, the more I loved what he did. And it just affirmed what I thought of the movie, which is that the scenes that are meant to be meaningful, there is zero humor. And we'll get into the scenes, but when Odin disappears, there's zero humor. There's no comedy break.
Yes.
When Loki and Thor reconcile at the end of the movie and he catches the piece and he's not an illusion, there's no humor. But all the moments where humor does kind of ruin the moment are where it's blowing up things that are kind of the old regime, if that makes sense. And that's what I think that's so brilliant. It's more meaningful than I think anyone ever gives it credit.
Just like Guardians, this is a movie that is funny, it's fast-paced, it's got action, but yes, Kyle, it still has heart. That's the Marvel key. Like, this is the Marvel, like, you put it on a pedestal, this is what you're shooting for. This is the kind of movie I want. When I say standalone film, Robbie and I have had this discussion before, like, could you show this movie to someone who's never seen a Marvel movie or Guardians 1 to someone who's never seen a Marvel movie and be like, this is the most complete standalone film. One of those two. That's how close it is up there.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
And one last thing to kind of wrap up the Taika talk, although we'll be mixing it in throughout the rest of the episode. But I watched the behind the scenes of this, and the extras feature a bunch of actors and actresses all talking about how genius Taika is and how fun it was to work with him. And when you kind of see how quirky he is and how involved he is on set, and by the way, he plays Korg, so he's right. actually mm-hmm. acting while directing. It's pretty remarkable. And I think, like, Jeff Goldblum's up there saying this was the most fun he's ever had on a movie. Chris Hemsworth, when he went to shoot Infinity War, I know he said he didn't want to lose some of this vibe that they had already created from Ragnarok. Like, it was a foundational shift in how they view sure. Thor.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Before we totally leave the Taika conversation behind, because we've referenced kind of the improv thing and other things about this movie, I do want to talk about it for a moment before we move on. I think it is astounding to me because by Taika's estimate, this movie is 80% improvised.
Wow.
Yikes.
And I don't know what
Robbie, that shocks me. Because as I watched, I wrote down so many lines where I thought, that is so intentionally meaningful. Are they right. just that good? Or they got that lucky? Or
I mean, yeah, and we never really know fully know what that means.
Right, that's what I was going to say. Yeah.
We think, you know, that means like they
you.
Set
I'm just
up,
impressed.
Yeah, they set up the right. scene, I think, with like, here's what we're trying to get. Here's kind of what we're trying to say. But then some of those specific lines, yeah, it's just impressive how they kind of came up with them out of nowhere.
I was listening to an interview that I've talked to Kyle about before with Taika that was fascinating, where he was talking about just his approach to comedy, and he started talking about Thor Ragnarok kind of in the midst of this conversation. And he was saying that from a directing standpoint, he had such a trustworthy, talented cast on this movie. I mean, obviously Chris Hemsworth and Mark Ruffalo and Tessa Thompson, Kate Blanchett, Jeff Goldblum. It's just like, it's a star-studded group that he felt like could really handle whatever he gave them. So he basically treated it like an indie film. It sounds a lot like what we talked about when we talked about Iron Man, when Jeff Bridges talked about kind of that experience, maybe not necessarily loving it. It sounds like the cast here really loved it. And what Taika did is he would say, like what Kyle's getting at, okay, in this scene, we need to go from point A to point B. So we need to go from Thor looking at weapons to Thor picking up a weapon and going out onto the arena floor. How we get there is totally up to you guys. Here's the kind of general character that I want you to be inhabiting. So do whatever wow. you think that character would do. And to be fair, like I'm sure that there are certain, especially maybe the more dramatic scenes, I'm sure that that was not as much the case. But the example he used was the reason I bring that up is that weapon scene where Korg makes the joke about the vampires huddled together.
Yes.
And
incredible.
Apparently, so like that scene came about because Taika and Chris Hemsworth were just on set basically making fun of the props and making fun of the prop guys because all the weapons just looked so ridiculous and so dumb. And in the midst of all of that, they just turned the camera on and that's what that scene became. He said originally it was like on the script, and I think maybe this helps us understand what he means when he says a lot of this was improv. Apparently uh-huh. the script just said, you know, Thor walks in and grabs a weapon and Korg said, good luck out there, man. And then he goes. And that was all that was written down. And so wow. everything else that's in that scene was just kind of their own chemistry. But I think you're so right in that, like, if there's any movie that feels like it has the imprint of a director, it's like in that interview, he talks about basically the way that he got this movie, and I think I've told Kyle this before, was he put together this.
Oh, yes.
have you heard this?
Well, I have, but our audience needs to hear it. It's incredible.
So he put together this collection of famous movie scenes set to Immigrant Song to kind of convey the vibe that he wanted this Thor movie to have, and that's what he showed to Kevin Feige. And Kevin Feige was so into it that he went for it and went for licensing Immigrant Song, which is apparently a pretty expensive song to license.
Yes,
which Taika was joking about. And it's just like it's crazy that like really it like his pitch was not, hey, this is what I think we can do story-wise, right? Like, his pitch was, this is this, like, crazy vibe that I want to bring to this franchise, and that's what works so well.
Yeah.
Yes. No doubt. Okay, I have a couple other big things before I get into, like, little scenes. One of the best parts of the Marvel Cinematic Universe in its entirety is that this movie pays off so much with these extra characters. Like, Civil War happened, and we talked about this. It's so fun to see all of our characters together in these Avengers films. But the characters that weren't in Civil War, we get them here. So, again, for me, we get the tie-in to the greater MCU while still making a standalone film. So it's just so fun for me to see Hulk and Bruce Banner on a different planet and all the funny situations you can come up with that, right? And Doctor Strange interacting with Thor and what that would be like. And, oh, so Earth has wizards now. Like, all that stuff is such a fun payoff if you've been invested in the MCU.
You can put down the umbrella now.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but even the callback, like I think, Robbie, you said already, the way Taika took the Thor franchise, so now we're just talking three films, and does some amazing things with it. Then he pushes it towards, I literally feel like I'm repeating myself from Guardians. We said the same things about how great it was, because he does that. He pushes it towards where we're headed, not just with the character, obviously, but with the MCU as a whole. And then he pays homage to everything that's happened before. It's like you took a movie and just planted it perfectly where it needs to land in the whole thing. So we're getting Age of Ultron context and the Quinjet, and we get the playback on that video, and it's just you are so in the MCU, even though you are on a really distant planet.
And some of the, like, the jokes about Tony's clothes and stuff like that.
Yeah,
it's amazing,
man. And I mean, for me, the scene that in terms of just making it feel like it honors the Thor trilogy is that moment at the end where he finally sits on the throne. And the score is this mixture of Patrick Doyle's Thor 1 score and Brian Tyler's Thor 2 score and Mark Mothersbaugh's Thor Ragnarok score. And it's all together. And it's like the first time we ever saw Thor, period, in the MCU. He's walking up to the throne about to take over from Odin. And then obviously the Frost Giants invade and things go crazy from there. But it's like now the last movie of the Thor series to date, you know, obviously now we have Thor Love and Thunder coming, but is him finally taking that throne. True. It's such a cool moment.
So cool.
Another thing this movie does really well, and they talked about this in the behind the scenes, was making two really powerful women characters. It's awesome to have Valkyrie, who's just like a badass and dominating, but then also a villain that's a female, which has never really happened before for us. And she's super strong and the goddess of death. And it actually brings me to one of my favorite meta jokes in the film, which is right after that weapon scene when Thor sees Valkyrie and he does the whole bit about how women warriors, like, I'm all about it. And he does like the thumbs up and like the wink. You know what I'm talking about?
Super cool.
That is one of my favorite jokes in the whole movie.
He's like, I love women. Maybe a little too much. I mean, not like in a creepy way.
But not like that. Exactly. I can't wait to get into Hela more because I have so much to say about her. I think her performance is amazing, but we can table that for a second.
Well, but and he obviously enjoys working with strong female characters and with these actresses because, I mean, apparently he's the one that really fought to bring Natalie Portman back into the franchise to be a female Thor.
Interesting.
Okay, one last big point before we really dive into each scene. We've talked about this in previous episodes, but how fun is Thor's arc from the beginning of the MCU to the end, right? And we're not there yet because we still have some really bold choices in Infinity War and Endgame, but you're talking about the other two Thors. We were talking about how much he's actually gone through. It really puts Endgame into perspective. This is a guy who has lost his mother. He's lost his father. He's been humbled himself. He's lost his brother. He's lost his planet. He doesn't feel like he fits as a king. But it's just so fun to kind of be on whatever, chapter 3 of 5 here, looking at at Thor as a character. It's just such a crazy, well-written story.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I like, I mean, to Kyle's point of just of praising the genius of Taika. And again, it goes back to James Gunn. Like when we're talking about the impact that these guys have, I mean, the Russo brothers obviously are hugely impactful in the way that they wind up shepherding kind of these big event movies. But I feel like Taika and James Gunn, more so than anyone except, you know, maybe Jon Favreau and Joss Whedon, really change the course of of the end of the Infinity Saga in terms of just like the feel of it all, because it's like, I feel like Infinity War, even outside of just Thor's storyline and what happens narratively, I think some of the quirkiness that happens there that I like a lot, like it takes a turn from what Civil War was in the Marcus McFeely writing. Like, I feel like they're trying to incorporate more of that James Gunn Guardians, Taika Waititi, Ragnarok feel, which I love. And I think those movies would be a lot worse off without those influences.
I couldn't agree more, Robbie. I think there's an, as I call it, emotional depth, as I call it. Everybody could use those words. Emotional depth that those specific movies do, where I think if you took those out, the MCU runs the risk of landing at Infinity War and really still dancing on the line of being stuck as a superhero saga. But with James Gunn and Taika, specifically Guardians, and I think other films, they do a great job. Russo's obviously do a great job of this in Civil War, but there is a greater emotional depth and character development where I think when you get to Infinity War, forget just the, like you guys have talked about on the podcast, just the superhero genre. It deserves to be just talked about in the film, broader film genre as meaningful and good, fun characters to watch that are funny, but also really relatable and really emotionally deep, I think.
Yeah.
No doubt. Okay, so let's just go to the very beginning of the movie, because right off the bat, we're like, boom, this is a different kind of Thor movie. I mean, how funny is the very first scene where he's in chains?
Oh, and no, Thor's in a cage.
Oh, no. It's the very first line. But how about when he's spinning? Nope, just give it a second. I swear, I'm not even moving. This is just doing it by itself.
By the way, just forgive me. I'm going to jump into the British or New Zealand accent multiple times in the next few minutes.
Oh, I love it.
Just warning you.
I love the son of Odin. Serta, son of a bitch.
Exactly.
And Kyle, what's interesting to me about that opening scene, and I'm reading this in certain reviews and it just kind of opened my eyes, but just how, if you think of what we've gotten before, so I'm going back a little bit to the context of the Thor franchise, I don't remember, one of you may know, if both movies started with an Odin narration, but the first movie did. And they both did. So it's Odin narrating, and it's him telling the story of the history of Asgard and the story that happened. And I'm teasing the punch for later a little bit, but Taika is going to shake a lot of that up and flip the script on us. And I love how clever he is to start it with, instead of Odin narrating, we're now going to get Thor narrating. And it's not dry, it's not history, it's not exposition even, it's actually kind of funny. And I love how that's like Guardians of the Galaxy throwing the huge yellow logo up on the screen. That's Taika's way of being like, boom, you're getting something different.
Yes.
I thought about what you said, Kyle, in our Guardians episode, like with that first scene, because like from the beginning, it is very different, like in the humor. But I was also noticing, like, in some ways that first scene feels kind of more like a classic Thor movie scene than anything else that follows, you know? So it's like, he's still got the long hair, like he's fighting in a fantasy world. And then it's like, as soon as he leaves and you see the Rainbow Bridge come down and Thor Ragnarok comes on, that's when, like, from then on, it's like, oh, this is a very different Thor movie. And in a similar way to what you said with the music and the title card in Guardians.
Oh, and I want to get, let's get into the movie, and then we're going to hit what I... later.
Okay, just hold on. Everybody stay calm. Okay, I love Taika as much as the next person. I love Taika so much, but I have to also say, I don't want Chris Hemsworth's performance to be lost in all this.
No doubt.
He is unbelievable with what he's given. This is peak Hemsworth. We finally got there.
Yep.
After all of the stuff, he's so comfortable. And so just... what Taika brought to this was so game-changing, but he also is a part of that game-changing in his character.
Totally agree.
And he's not even the only Hemsworth in the film, so that's saying something.
How about the very next scene with the surprise Matt Damon cameo? Are you kidding me? Funny.
Yeah. Our theater was losing it.
It has to be said that Chris Hemsworth did personally petition Kevin Feige to make a movie like this, like a Thor movie that was more kind of comedic and just like zanier. And he referenced Guardians specifically. I think we've mentioned that before, but I mean, so you have to think
so good.
you know, I mean, I'm sure that wasn't the only factor going into it, but if your star comes to you and kind of pushes for that, and I know that Chris Hemsworth all along the way since then has really been one to push his character to the limits and to kind of try to make that character not what it sort of became there in that, like, in that period between Avengers and Age of Ultron and Thor Dark World, where it was just this kind of invincible, really hot, long hair demigod. You know, like, I think you're right. We definitely have to give him credit for that.
I just love what you said, Robbie. I didn't know that specific fact. I think that's amazing. But think if you're Chris Hemsworth looking around, Robert Downey Jr. started off pretty BA. Chris Evans gets picked up by the Russos and it's totally shifted and just the character, you know, takes it three notches up. And then if you're Chris Hemsworth, you've been in an Avengers movie, now two Avengers movies where you've gotten a taste of what your character could be, I think, as far as humor, being directed right by other people, and your franchise compared to the rest of the characters has been a little bit lackluster. Sure. You got to be hungry for something, for a change of pace.
Oh, yeah.
I'm laughing to myself because it's so funny how Loki remembers that play. You know, how his death is like totally skewed. I didn't do it for them.
Well, and I love how, and I think we talked about this in our Dark World episode, but I love how, he brings in the Brian Tyler.
Yes, with the choir.
It's the guys, same Brian theme Tyler from when is a god. Loki's, it's the same theme from when Loki is dying. In that
Okay. Robbie knows I'm obsessed with Brian Tyler, so
no, but I am too.
It's just it is that good. Like, go back and listen to the Thor Dark World soundtrack and tell me you're not totally moved, please. It's amazing.
No doubt, but you can still make fun of that moment because
so
much of Ragnarok is and this is the genius. It's so honoring what's come before it, but also just completely making fun of it and very self. What would be the word?
Self-deprecating.
Thank you.
Well, so you just referenced that Chris Hemsworth, you know, saw what the other Avengers kind of got to be, what his character could be. It's interesting you say that because, again, in the bonus features, he talks about how Thor is different now because he's been to Earth. He's spent some time there. Hmm. He's actually had a chance to kind of see other cultures and evolve in that way. So I think it's really funny to go from that scene to him going back to Earth when they're finding Odin to see him taking like the selfie. And but my point is
this conversation with Doctor Strange about the
one of the funniest lines in the movie though when the girl says, "I'm sorry that Jane dumped you," and he says, "She didn't dump me. I dumped her. It was a mutual dumping."
It was a mutual dumping.
Exactly. Guys, did you get chills when Doctor Strange shows up, though, floating?
No doubt.
Robbie, please tell me you at least did. Please.
I was very excited.
Wait, Kyle, you're a bigger Doctor Strange guy than Robbie is? Am I remembering that right?
I think so, but okay. You can't deny how cool it is when he's floating in, though, and silhouetted.
No, I love it, and I love the way that Taika directs him, and I like that it's the only time we've gotten yellow gloves Doctor Strange. I don't know if y'all noticed that.
Was that a hashtag comic nerd moment there?
It definitely is. But it's like a classic. The classic costume is he has the yellow gloves and awesome. Taika's the only one that went for it.
I just, his cape and that's floating amazing. Up. And then it's funny with Loki, I've been falling for 20 minutes. And then it's kind of even just fun to see Doctor Strange's power for 1 second too, right? How he's throwing Thor off. And then when Loki attacks, he's like, all right, see ya. And just for 1 second. Yeah. But then guys, every time we get a scene with Odin, it just moves me. Like, Thor in this movie gets his Peter, take my hand moment. He's going to get that later. But all these Odin scenes are so good. Like Kyle said, they don't joke when Odin's around, and I love that.
Yeah.
They still keep the seriousness of the moment, including how he's explaining Hela showing up and all that stuff. The gravity of the moment is felt there.
I do. If I can go back for 1 second, because I think there's a couple things to say, and then I wanted to hear what you guys have to say about the Odin scene. I had to nod to when Loki is directing the play, right? And it's a classic. I love, first of all, how Taika uses a lot of his same actors. So like Sam Neill, who many fans will recognize from the Jurassic Park film. He's a Hunt for the Wilder People actor, so one of Taika's guys. You have Luke Hemsworth, Chris's brother. And then I have to say, maybe the hardest I laugh in the entire film, it's an easily missable moment, is when Matt Damon as Loki dies. watch, go back and watch it. He tips his head back and he goes, and he gasps. It's one of the funniest moments in the entire MCU. And I feel like too many people miss it. And it's incredible. I just had to get that in there before we get to the next.
Well, that whole performance is, and I love Matt Damon's line where he's like, I'm sorry about that whole thing with the Tesseract. I'm such a trickster.
Yes, that part, that's joke. What I'm talking about. That's Chris Hemsworth's brother playing Thor, first of all, which correct. Is amazing. And him being like, I know. And yes, you are.
It was a hilarious joke.
You're so mischievous.
Okay, so Kyle, I interrupted you. I want to go back to the scene with Thor and Loki and Odin, because I think that is a huge turning point in the film.
So one thing I think is really interesting on this watch, and I would love to hear y'all's thoughts here. I feel like we see the real ramifications of Loki stealing the throne at the end of Thor 2.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like,
because you never really get that at first. What the point of that is?
Right, and we talked about that and kind of laughed about the way that was done some on that episode. But one, we're now seeing that, like, if not for that, maybe, you know, none of this stuff would have happened. I think you can argue about kind of what Odin's tried to communicate there. But there's a very real emotional moment towards the end of this scene where, you know, it's starting to lightning and thunder and Thor's like, you know, this is your doing. And you see your very classic, just angry kind of warrior Thor. And I think also there are some other real ramifications for the greater MCU that I don't think we would have thought about at the time, with Odin not being on the throne and not exercising his duties as King of Asgard.
Well, and that kind of transitions me right into the Hela discussion, because right after Odin passes, Hela shows up. And, you know, the sheer charisma of Cate Blanchett's performance could have carried this character. But the reason for me that Hela is like one of the top three villains is because Hela enlightens something about Odin and Asgard that she's kind of right about.
Yep.
So, like, it gives another layer to her character, because you're kind of like, well, she's not wrong. Like you said the thing about, well, the ramifications of Loki sitting on the throne. Well, what was Odin's plan anyways? At some point, Odin was going to die.
Right.
So what was his plan? My point is, he's not perfect. And I love that Hela brings that to us about his character.
Yeah, for sure. And I also kind of like, I mean, if we look at where Odin was the last time that we saw him, we talked about how at the end of Thor 2, he was angry about Frigga's death. He was being kind of overly aggressive towards Malekith and was being reckless. To your point, Loki taking him out of commission, it's like he's gotten so reflective now, and he's had time to think about kind of his own mistakes as king. It's like a very it's a very different Odin than we first met in the first Thor film, and especially in the second Thor film, but it's very believable.
His performance is amazing here too. I'm going to say that about everybody. That's the thing.
Well, I think this is the place to at least start to mention, and this is a thread that'll probably pop up a lot in our conversation in general, but Taika Waititi, and you have to know a little bit about his own story, but he is doing a very intentional political commentary here that lands, and this is again where it's so cool how it's a great message for any film, and then he fits it into the MCU so seamlessly.
Right.
That, like I said earlier, it's literally a masterclass in directing and narrative storytelling. But the point I'll make here to what you guys just said is how we've gotten the version of Asgard and Odin and Thor from a national power, if you will, where the people in charge get to tell the story and get to tell history. And we literally see that, where Loki is literally directing a play that has a sort of rewritten history to favor him. And then this comparison, again, I got to give credit to the research. This didn't come from my own brain, but a comparison was made to almost how Captain America goes through his shift with S.H.I.E.L.D. and Hydra is not too dissimilar from what Thor experiences with Asgard and its history. Hela becomes the vehicle for that message to say, you think you know the history here. And one of the points that was made that I forgot about was in Thor 1, when Laufey says, when they show up on the ice planet Jotunheim, he says Odin is a murderer and a thief. And it's just a throwaway line. And yet here we are two films later in the franchise getting that reminder. And it's right. Like, no, he was actually right. Now we're going to tell you the story. That I just love that direction.
And when she knocks away the murals totally. And there's murals underneath and it's her holding the hammer with yep. Odin.
Yeah.
As if like what she's saying is true.
Yeah. Chills.
Oh, I didn't notice that she's holding the hammer.
She's holding the hammer, dude.
Yeah.
Go back and look. In fact, I know it's for a fact because Grace, one of our listeners, pointed this out on Instagram, and I looked for it. She's holding Mjolnir.
Yeah.
Wow.
Which changes a lot, I feel like.
But it sets Thor on a trajectory for the rest of the film to, he is literally reevaluating everything he knows about himself, about his lineage or his heritage, about Asgard.
It reminds me a lot of Black Panther. And kind of these ideas sure. of colonialism
yes.
and
yeah, what, point.
Like the story it's telling there.
Yep.
Well, and even in the transition that Thor has thinking about Asgard, I think is similar to the journey that T'Challa has to go on and thinking of Wakanda as this like very perfect place that's always doing the right thing.
Right. And Thor's version is Asgard's not a place, it's a people. That's kind of his right. version of learning that. Yes.
Right.
Yep. And as I said in the first scene where we get a transition from Odin has typically told the story. Thor opens with a narration. Then we literally get Loki telling the story. He kind of becomes the example of the political, you know, power telling the history they want to tell. And then in comes Hela, and now it transitions to her, where now she's telling the story. And Thor, from there, really goes on this downward trajectory where until the very end, he's just, like, compare the opening scene where Thor, I thought this was so clever how they did this. In the opening scene, watch it and think of every little detail of what Thor's doing. He even says, I wrote it down, Surtur says to him, you can't stop Ragnarok, why fight it? And Thor says, because that's what heroes do. And it's like,
yeah, right.
It's almost like making, like a meta kind of making fun of heroes because then he catches the hammer, everything, it's the song.
But also that he's still so Kyle's arrogant still. Also.
Correct, but you get the fire blowing against his face. He's spinning the hammer. He's like punching, kicking. It's literally the superhero everything. He's at the right. pinnacle of what he thinks he's supposed to be.
Hmm.
And then from there, the whole movie is just a downward trajectory where he can't win.
It's a deconstruction.
And as one review said, he's the god of lightning who's continually getting electrocuted. And it's almost like, huh. No, that doesn't even, oh my gosh. I was like, that theme is incredible.
I've actually never thought of that.
Huh. Yeah, that's interesting.
To kind of sum up what we were just talking about, one thing I caught more on this watch, I mean, this is maybe obvious. I always thought Hela was just strong and a badass, but I never really caught how right she is about some of this stuff. Like, when I saw that picture of her holding Mjolnir, it put in context for me, she's not lying when she says, I am his firstborn. Like, she kind of has a right to the throne, kind of like Killmonger in that way. You right, know what I mean? Like, right. She's not 100% yeah. wrong. And I know that's obvious, but that just more dawned on me this time. So it kind of made it cool. Next level.
Yeah, I mean, I think we, you know, we have to think, like, Odin is the one that changed. I mean, and you can already, I mean, Odin, I think, you know, morally changed for the best, but it's like, she is right that they got this whole, you know, empire, you could say, through her own prowess in battle, and they, once he kind of reached a point where he felt like it, you know, they could plateau, he banished her. And so now she's coming back and she's being rejected by these people. And she's the one that gave them everything that they have now.
Right.
And so, yeah, I mean, it's not, she's not crazy for one, wanting to rule, and two, being a bit hurt that no one even remembers who she is.
Yeah. True. Yeah. Fair.
Yeah. There's not a single character that ends the movie where they started, which I think is really cool. And there's ones we haven't mentioned yet, like Valkyrie.
I love that you said that.
Yeah, think about Thor, Odin, Loki, obviously, and then Valkyrie. But the main characters where they all kind of have this one identity at the beginning, and then there's this total shift of attitude, ideology, whatever, throughout the film.
That's just a perfect tie-in to our Ant-Man and the Wasp episode last week because I said, hey, that movie's really fun and it's cool and it's fast-paced and all this stuff, but I'm not sure the characters go anywhere. So you're so right. What a juxtaposition to watch this movie right after that and see, wow, they move every character down the line.
Right. So if we're talking about main characters, can we talk about the Hulk for a second?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. It's my favorite Hulk ever. I love it so much.
Because, I mean, wow. Like, this is a huge step for that character. I mean, you've gone from maybe, what, like 10 to 15 words total from the Hulk ever in movies prior to this to full-on conversations.
It's just so funny to talk about these two characters because these are the two that are controversial to people with how they're treated. But I love it. I love that we finally get different versions of Hulk all along the way.
Yeah.
Like, Hulk and Thor's progression makes sense in my brain.
Do you guys remember
the logical choice?
Do you guys remember how you experienced it in the movie? I think of the first, I believe the first scene with Thor, obviously, is the reveal in the arena when they introduce to us as the audience, he's speaking, but it's still a little bit the old Thor, right? Like, where he's no banner, only Hulk. I forget what he says, but then
right.
I think it's the second scene we get with him where I remember being in the theater and being like, oh, this is cool. This is new. And I was a little thrown off when he's, I think, in the shadows and he's in the tub.
Right.
And he says, Quinjet, yes. And he splashes his hand on the water. Like, how'd you get here? And they start to converse. And I was just like, this is awesome. Like, what a creative turn.
To me, it makes sense that Hulk is stuck as Hulk after the embarrassment of Ultron, to me.
Hmm.
But I also want to add that I think Bruce's role in this movie is so fun too.
Yeah.
Like, we get to see what Bruce on a different planet, but also being strong and a good character can look like even outside of the context of the Avengers.
Right.
So I'm all in on the Hulk, but based off your hesitation, Robbie, I'm picking up that you are not.
No, I am. I was going to say,
okay, you are. Okay.
In terms of cast members, kind of really influencing the trajectories of their characters. Like, again, I think it should be said that Mark Ruffalo went to Kevin Feige and they were talking about, given the licensing restrictions for the Hulk character and the fact that Marvel Studios can't do any more solo Hulk films because their deal with Universal, they wanted to do a Hulk movie kind of spread out among other films. And the way they did that was starting with Ragnarok and then Infinity War and Endgame. And Feige and Ruffalo saw that as kind of a sort of Hulk movie trilogy in a sense, you know, where he's a part of those, but obviously not necessarily the main character. And I think if you view this as the first film in that and the big step that it takes in taking Hulk again from, like, he was pretty much the same character from the time we met him up until Ragnarok, maybe had the least real change of any of the main Avengers. Yeah. And by, I mean, not only, you know, it makes sense because you have Hulk staying as Hulk for years, which is way, way longer than we've ever seen him be the Hulk. And so it makes sense that he's kind of getting a chance to exercise his own personality more fully.
Yes.
But I think even what you see with Bruce there at the end, like, so much of what he does in this movie is pretty funny, and you don't have a ton of serious work from Mark Ruffalo in this movie. But if you think about the significance of the decision that he makes at the end to jump out of the ship and start fighting as Hulk, he had said before in the movie, if I turn back into Hulk, I don't know if Banner will ever come back. That's a sacrifice play.
But I also don't want to miss that scene where he's finally coming out of Hulk and turning into Bruce with that.
Sure,
to me, that's maybe the most moving, powerful thing he's ever had.
That's not an easy acting job. When you, like, if I say as a director, dude, you've been Hulk for 2 years, and they had, Robbie, to your point, like, I agree 1,000%. We know what happens with the character at the very end. There's a payoff with the characters being blended, but I love how they give us some more emotional depth with the Hulk himself. And then I think as a director, if you say to Ruffalo, you're coming out of it and now I need you to act with Thor, like, how would you act if you've been this way? And there's obviously some script, but I think Ruffalo just nails it as far as being disoriented, kind of frustrated, a little, like, I don't even know. I think he does a perfect job.
Well, and Thor is like, "Why you're being so weird? Why are you being so weird?"
Sun's getting low. Sun's getting real low.
Yes. Stop saying that. Why do you keep saying that? As a side note, too, I think this is actually the best animation on the Hulk we've ever had so far. Like his coming out of the Hulk, going back to Bruce, looks amazing to me.
Right.
That fish out of water bit with Bruce being on a different planet is some of the funniest stuff in the movie to me. Like when he says, you've been on a planet before? Yeah, one. Well, now you've been on two.
Use one of your PhDs. None of them are in flying spaceships.
For a little bit, guys, I was almost going to name this episode Tony and the Gypsy.
Yeah. He's like, wait, what are you wearing? It's a disguise. Where's my disguise? You are the disguise.
On the Bruce Banner front, before we kind of turn the page, one thing I caught on this watch that I thought was really fun is there's the scene where Thor and Banner are like making fun of each other and they're mean and who's the strongest Avenger. And I love that the thing that offends Hulk the most is he says, you're right. No one on Earth likes you. They all hate you. Mm-hmm. And nothing Thor says to that point bothers Hulk until that. And I kind of love that tie-in because his entire fear is based off that he doesn't really fit in on Earth and he's afraid of what he can do in a bad way. You know what I mean?
Well, you think of Age of Ultron when he goes nuts and as he's kind of coming out of it, he wakes up and he sees the terror and they do that zoom in on his eyes and you see like a sadness, like, oh no, what have I done?
Yeah.
Yes. It again helps paint the context of Endgame a little better, and I'm not going to spoil it, because you just understand that he's been fighting with this Hulk disease, if you will, his whole life. It's not a superpower like the other characters love. You know what I mean?
It's a great point.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so true.
I think it's probably worth talking about Valkyrie for a little bit and being just introduced as a character, how she's introduced, I think is really creative. And then from like seeing her in the arena, Thor's conversation with her across the laser field. But then kind of where it goes from there, I think is giving us a little bit of that backstory on the Valkyrie and even tying Hela into all of that and why she left, you know, in the first place.
Yep. It's so good.
Well, and what I think I had kind of forgotten, and it's obviously pretty prominent in this movie, but the fact that whenever Thor meets her, you know, she's got this drinking problem.
Yeah.
And that's how she's kind of trying to deal with her own trauma. And then later down the road, there's going to be a total role reversal there. And I really hadn't thought about that when I watched it.
Wow.
I love when he says, though, I was going to talk to you about your drinking problem. She goes, oh, I'm still drinking. It's not that.
I laugh at that scene every time.
That entire scene, by the way, is so funny. It sounds like that's an improv line when he says, I picked up the snake because he knows I love snakes. And he goes that whole story. And
it is an improv line. Yeah, that is one that I've heard specifically Chris Hemsworth came up with on the spot, the whole snake story.
Had to have been. Yeah, had to have been. It's so funny.
So I want to give a shout out to that scene. I think when Loki touches Valkyrie's forehead and sends her back to the memory of being on Asgard, we obviously don't know that that's who her character is or what she was known for. And I got to just say visually, it might be the coolest visual shot in the film.
I commented on that too.
You know what I'm talking about? When they're falling in slow motion, as Kyle would say, chills.
It's a Zack Snyder shout out visually, I feel like.
It is, yeah.
It's like a very graphic novel feel for a second, which I think works really well because it's a memory.
Yes, right. Yeah. It was so, I love that so much. I love her character, and I think Tessa does a great job acting it. So every scene that she's in, I'm all about it.
Okay, guys, that brings me right to, we have to talk about Jeff Goldblum. I mean, this guy is a total weirdo, and I love every second of it. And just Sakaar in general. Like, speaking of Guardians, talk about a vibey, colorful, crazy planet that's basically like the trash pit of the galaxy. But then for Jeff Goldblum to rise to power there and all of his lines, I mean, everyone. How about the Disneyland type feeling scene when Thor's on the ride and when he disintegrates the people? Oh my God! Like all
even the Disneyland ride is a great way directorially of giving us some exposition without just having a character narrate something. Like it was such a creative visual way of doing something new and still telling us about the planet and the people.
And Jeff Goldblum playing the keyboard while he's talking to him. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
I think like Robbie is contractually obligated to record in a different location each time, state or country. The joke I heard was Jeff Goldblum is contractually obligated to disappear for like 10 years and then pop up in a random movie and just be the weirdest character ever and then go underground again for 10 more years.
but I love it so much. How about his sidekick when he's like, you know what I always say? Starts with a B, you're the, and she goes, trash. No, that's not what I was going to say. That doesn't even start with a B. You know, all that stuff is so
Rachel
funny.
House is another Taika Waititi regular, that actress.
Oh, nice. Well, and
oh,
the,
dude.
Oh, I hate that word.
It's my birthday. Yes.
Yes, I hate that word. Don't use the S word.
Sorry, and the prisoners with jobs are revolting.
He goes, okay, ooh, I kind of like that. You're right. I like that.
Little political commentary getting thrown in there too, which I love.
Right. Yeah, I think Sakaar, as long as we're talking about comic book influences, it was really fun because it's the first time you really see a lot of these Jack Kirby, like classic Marvel designs thrown in. And not just kind of obtusely, but very directly. Like it's clear that they wanted to pay homage to that vision. And so I'll post some stuff online. The really squared but kind of funky looking helmets that you see from some of the like guards in the Grandmaster's palace compound are like straight out of these old Jack Kirby comics. Like the champions that you see on the front of that building in that first shot are kind of straight out of Jack Kirby designs. And sort of also shout outs to other Marvel characters that we may or may not end up seeing in the MCU. So the comic book fan in me was pretty delighted with the design of Sakaar in general.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, and we get our Stan Lee cameo and our Thor our Thor haircut, which is much of a comic moment. It's a turning point, you know, in the greater story.
Oh, yeah. And we get Korg at that time too. Korg.
Yes. Can we please talk about Korg? We got to talk about Korg. All right, so it's Taika Waititi, as you said, Kyle.
Just all of his lines, though. Oh, thought he was dead. Oh, he's alive.
Tried to start a revolution. I didn't print off enough pamphlets. Nobody came.
Enough pamphlets.
Maybe the funniest line in the movie to me.
Not enough pamphlets. That's unbelievable.
I tried to start a revolution and didn't print off enough pamphlets.
Yeah, it's the whole place is a circle, but not like a normal circle, like a really weird, trippy circle.
What he's like, just like my mom and her boyfriend, who I hate.
I never caught that, Robbie. That's
a great line. I love when they come back and hand him a gun. Which one's Korg? And he goes, the revolution has begun. He's like so excited.
Did you guys catch that when Loki disappears into the wall, Korg comes out of the background of the shot and he kicks the wall and goes, peace off, ghost.
Yes. He freaking disappeared.
That's the thing about this movie is there's so many characters that have as many lines as Korg. I love all of them. Yeah. Like I'm trying to go through all of them, but they all have their moments.
One of my favorite lines from Korg is whenever he finds Loki with a little inhibitor chip on his neck or on his back, and Loki's like, "Well, you do look like you're in desperate need of leadership." Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. It's worth noting that somebody like my brother who doesn't really get into these movies thinks Korg's the funniest person in the world. Like Chris loves this movie partially because of Korg. So it's just interesting that this movie has that ability kind of like Guardians, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
So can I go deep for just a minute? Because I feel like we're there.
Please.
Do it.
About some Please of the narrative that Taika, I'm going to go through this quickly and then I would love to hear your guys' thoughts. But on researching, found a few things. One, Taika Waititi is of Maori descent. So he is like of the indigenous people of New Zealand.
Uh-huh.
He calls himself a Polynesian Jew because his dad was Polynesian, indigenous person, and his mom was a Russian Jew.
Huh.
So all of his life has identified as, you know, a minority. And in the movie itself, and he does this in a lot of his films, that's why I would encourage our audience to go back and watch some of his films, Hunt for the Wilder People, Boy, and notice the themes that he puts in about nationalism, colonization, powers coming in and conquering local peoples. And the more I researched and saw some of the imprint he put on Thor Ragnarok, I, again, as Kyle would say, just chills. Where he takes at the beginning, if Thor doesn't come in, you have Loki who would become a ruler who is completely self-obsessed and doesn't actually live to serve his people. But Thor comes in and disrupts that. We then go to Sakaar, and I think you see what Loki would have become in the Grandmaster.
Oh,
so then in the
wow.
Grandmaster now, you have a powerful dictator who he's got the big, what do you call it? The big CGI or, you know, visual of himself.
Hologram.
Everything is about him. And I didn't catch this the first time watching the film, but there's in one of the halls, there's a statue of him holding a sword and a shield. Like he's literally conquered in battle.
Huh.
When in the movie, that's not his character at all. But again, it's an example of someone in power telling the story and telling history. And then
right.
Taika uses characters in the film very, very deliberately to continue to kind of build this framework of you have a world where it can be all about nationalism and we are what this country is. We are prominence and power, and he's literally lived it. Or we can be about people who are about loving people and relationships. And he plays off that contrast the entire movie. I could give you some examples so well where Hela reveals it, but then would really just seek to recreate it.
Love that.
Yeah. So anyway, I want to let you guys jump in or respond to that. I have some examples that might kind of blow your mind, but I thought it was so cool how he uses the film to kind of say, this is what Thor is about. And it's essentially what Thor identifies with Asgard, where to him, his identity right. is the hammer. It is Asgard. And all that's going to blow up, which I think is so cool.
I love that.
Again, so many layers to this film. That's the thing.
Yeah. No, I would love to hear. I would love to have my mind blown.
Yeah, let me just run through. Because again, I don't get credit for this. I just was doing research. So let me give you a few examples. So you have a Loki did it on Asgard. The Grandmaster does it on Sakaar. We distract ourselves with entertainment, right? And so our heroes are sports figures. Our heroes are gladiators. But in each case, it's just kind of sitting in, as Thor says, sitting in your bathrobe and being entertained. And that's, we just kind of live as that kind of naive, that ignorant theme. Scourge, I thought this was really cool, in a sense represents the worst of us, meaning a character who is not necessarily seeking status for power, but he puts himself under Hela for the material pleasures and possessions he can have. And Taika does that right on the nose. If you remember, he's entertaining the two girls in the round
Des and Troy.
Thing. And he goes, look at all my stuff. And he right. literally has like the As Seen on TV stuff. And he's working with the shake weight.
yeah.
It's such a parody on us, how we may see the dysfunctions of society, but we're okay being numbed with entertainment. And we're at the end of the day, if the things remaining in power allow us to climb the ladder a little bit and stay comfortable and have the things we need, it's kind of easy to be okay with that.
Right.
And I'm
this
reading
just
that
got
just
so
like,
deep.
Oh my gosh.
Wow.
But then, so to contrast with Scourge, Korg, Taika himself, becomes a little bit of the juxtaposition to that character. So I didn't catch this again watching the film, but when Thor walks in the prison, remember it is a circular prison. In other words, you're stuck in a cycle, right? So think of that imagery. Like they're in they're stuck in a circular prison where the people in the prison literally can't get out. He walks in and he goes, and Korg waves at him. He goes, "Hey, down here, pile of rocks. I am a being." He says, "I am a being," and it's whoa. He gets really deep, and it's like, "I'm not just a pile of rocks." But it's this idea, and then he talks about the revolution. He represents the idealist, maybe the idealist in all of us, trapped in the circular prison, trying to revolt. But it fails every time because of how the system is just set the way it is. And that's so much of, I wanted our audience to appreciate that Taika is literally putting that in the movie from his own life experience where Europeans came in and colonized New Zealand. And I so just appreciate how he can take, like I said, take a film where a franchise already exists and still put in such a meaningful narrative.
Wow.
So Woo! Consider your minds blown.
Well, yeah. Well, which is such a powerful thing to do because, I mean, like Thor coming in with this like Shakespearean accent, right? Like represents, if anything, like what we would consider to be kind of the idealized British, like medieval narrative that is largely a fiction, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So good.
Like this heroic mythological thing. And yeah, so I think it is like such an interesting idea to have an indigenous person come in and take charge of that story. And what you've been saying, one, is fantastic, and I loved all of it. And two, just reminds me that, like, I know we talked some about how Ragnarok pulls from Guardians and maybe was able to exist in a lot of ways because of Guardian's success. And I think that that is fair. But I think that it should be said that, like, I don't think Taiko is just doing Guardians, you know, meets Thor.
Agreed.
Like, I really think he great brought point, in, Robbie. Like, an entirely different vision, you know, yes. Like, it really is his own thing. And I think, like, on the one hand, you know, Kyle just pointed out really beautifully sort of the messaging that he brought. But I thought in this interview I was listening to that I referenced earlier, he talks about his own approach to comedy and how that's so different from what he calls the American style of comedy. And that, to me, is why I love this movie, I think, more than... We'll talk about this, but I think it's the funniest Marvel movie because the comedy's so unique.
What a perfect transition. That's where I was going to go, and I have that written down. I'm officially going to say this is the funniest movie in the MCU. I am moving it one notch ahead in funniness over Guardians. On this rewatch, I literally belly laughed like 20 times, and I'm not kidding.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think it's, and I think the reason why it's so funny to me is the humor, and this makes sense. You know, Kyle, you're talking about being a Taika fan. Like, if you've seen some of these other movies, the style of humor is not unfamiliar to you, but within the context of the MCU,
it's different.
It's very different, and I think what I love is he talks about how he wanted to make this feel different from a movie like, say, I mean, the other Thor movies, but even something like Civil War, which I obviously love that movie, and I think it has some pretty funny lines too. But he talks about how American comedy can fall into this pattern of, like, here's a line, here's a line, here's a line, here's the funny line. Okay, now next scene, here's a line, here's a line, here's a line, and, like, how it's this rhythm, and I never thought about it that way. But he was talking in this interview, like, if you listen to these American comedies or you, like, read the screenplay, there's this rhythm that it falls into over and over again. And I think that's why shows like The Office were so huge, is because they can kind of break up those rhythms. Yeah. And I think what he's doing here is it's so unexpected. Like, you never know when a joke's popping up. Like, you never quite know what the timing's gonna be. Like, it doesn't fit into, like, what we're expecting. Like, we don't know when to get ready to laugh the way that we would. I think with even, like, it's different even from Guardians, and that's not me disparaging Guardians, but you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's so weird in the way that it's funny, and I love it.
So, Robbie, I would love for you to send me that interview because I'd love to watch it.
Yeah, it's fantastic. You know, I
don't know if you would agree with what I'm about to say. The way I've described Taika's sense of humor, or New Zealand, where you have kind of an augmentation of a British comedy, where American comedy is often very emotional, somewhat on the nose, British comedy on the complete other end is often very dry, and it maybe never even goes to that emotional place or the depth. Taika's comedy is such an incredible, like, amalgamation of the two, where it's very dry. Like you said, you're laughing. I've described it as, I'll watch one of his movies, I'll be laughing, and then all of a sudden I'm crying.
Yeah, watch Jojo Rabbit.
Where did that come from?
Jeez, yeah.
But you're not, and I love that, because you're not told when to laugh, you're not told when to cry. He's just funny and emotionally deep at the same time.
Right.
And you're just invested in the characters, and I think that's so cool.
Okay, so we are over an hour into this, and I'm going to say my first negative thing. Oh, are you ready? Okay. It's so minor, but you're transitioning so perfectly for me. And I know I'm going to be in the minority compared to you two. If I had to compare this movie and Guardians, it's literally almost perfect. It's flawless. I love it so much. Don't hear me saying anything other than that. But there are two times where it has a little bit of the Guardians 2-ness for me, which is there's two jokes I wish I could remove from the movie, because anti what Kyle said earlier in this episode, there's two times where he doesn't let me fully sit in the seriousness and breaks up with a joke that I wish didn't exist. So
I might fight you.
Okay,
on
okay. So the first one that I would argue is Loki says, "Get help." The second time when they're on the Rainbow Bridge, And Asgard's falling apart. They just found out they can't defeat Hela. Everything's about to die, and they're lined up, like, literally saying, okay, I'm going to fight her to death, even though I probably won't live through it all. And in that moment, I just want to sit there and feel the stakes of what's about to happen. And Loki says, I'm not doing Get Help. That's where I'm like, that's the one joke where I'm like, just let me feel the circumstances and don't make me laugh here. So I don't like that one. And then before you respond, I'll say the other one I don't like is the very, 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 very end of the movie. He finally gets this like emotional, like gets to sit down on the throne in the spaceship. And it's kind of like, you're our king. And he does this like turn around and kind of waves to the crowd of like, oh, hi. I just don't know that I needed that. I wanted to sit in the fact that Thor embrace your throne once and for all. Am I crazy? It's so minor, but those are the only two times.
I've got thoughts, but Robbie, do you want to respond first?
I was going to say largely, well, Kyle and I talked about this after we first watched the movie briefly.
Okay.
And I saw that for the first time, the turnaround and wave to the crowd. And I thought, okay, well, you know, like it is maybe breaking up the emotion of the scene. But then again, you know, you also have the Korg Meek moment there that I think is really funny. I think it's I could see where Kyle's coming from. I will say none of it's ever bothered me. Like, and the scene that he talked about with Loki, the second Get Help has never been something that's bothered me at all. So you are crazy in that.
No, and I'm just saying it's so minor. I'm just saying if I have to choose between this and Guardians 1, Guardians 1 never does that for me. There's not a single moment where I feel that.
What are your thoughts, Kyle?
So I won't, Kyle, I don't have a strong response either way to the first one about the Get Help. I don't know that I even noticed it, or maybe I did one of those little micro chuckles, but not enough that it bothered me. And again, the blessings of having a great film in front of you is we're going to get into nitpick territory.
Yeah, this is so nitpicky. It's so nitpicky.
We would acknowledge that. However, your second one, it brings me to kind of, I'm going to land the plane on the overall narrative, which this works so perfectly because we needed to hear this last piece, is this. I think where Taika is irreverent in the film is very, very deliberate, because what the arc he's building, and I referenced this a little bit already with Thor starts out in that scene with Surtur as the perfect hero in every way. He literally slays a dragon. From there, he can't win. And there's that theme I said earlier where you have a god who can control thunder, control the elements, constantly getting electrocuted. And it's so on the, you know, almost on the nose of just like, he's just losing, loss after loss after loss.
Mm-hmm.
I think the narrative that a lot of this is building is where, think about the first Thor movie, and we've poked fun at it enough, but in the film, the character arc, while not non-existent, is within the runtime of the film, he loses his hammer, regains his worthiness, and gets the hammer back. But it's still about the hammer.
Right.
Where Taika takes it to the next level is Thor's character has to realize, and it goes with everything I've already said about Taika putting on kind of his worldview lens to move away from, this isn't about nationalism and the power of the bureaucracy and keeping all the hierarchy in place so that we can move up and gain comfort and pleasure. It's about people and relationships. And that narrative stays true with Thor and Loki. It stays true with Odin disappearing. It stays true with Thor and Valkyrie. And I think what he's doing is saying it's not about Asgard. It's not about the throne. And so where Odin disappears and there's no humor, where Thor and Loki reconcile and there's no humor, I think, Kyle, to respond to your point, I think Taika is being very deliberately comedic. Like when Korg says, it's okay, the foundations are still there, we can rebuild.
Yes.
And it will become a haven. It will become a haven for people and aliens for years to come. And then the thing literally explodes as if Taika says, nope, it's all gone. And he goes, no, those foundations are gone.
Yeah, which is so funny.
It's supposed to, I think, be telling us like, no, it's not about the throne. It's not about Asgard and the place. It's about the people, you know, as it even tells us. And then obviously the moment we haven't talked about yet, but not about even being the god of hammers.
Right.
I hear that and receive that. To reiterate, I'm crazy nitpicking. I'm just saying if I have to differentiate, and I maybe would just devil's advocate, sure. I would say, all of that, what you just said, could have maybe happened without that one sarcastic wave. Like, I love those lines from Korg about the foundations and that Meek was dead and I stepped on him, and all that is hilarious to me. I don't know. It's just, again, it's so minor. And yeah, I love the first get help joke, just to clarify, when he says it the first time.
Yeah.
I'm just talking about the second time. Okay, guys, we have to just talk about, and this is where I'm going to be full-blown, like, geek, just, I'm in heaven right now. This may be, and I understand there's portals, and I understand there's Wakanda and all this stuff, but this may be the greatest stretch of, like, 45 seconds in the MCU for me.
Yes.
And again, this is up there with Peter Take My Hand for me, because this is his Peter Take My Hand moment, where Hela says, what are you the god of again? But then the genius, the Flash with the drums, boom, boom, and it's flashing to Odin. Then he goes there fully.
So good.
And Odin has, I have chills. It just happened. I have chills right now. Odin goes to some of the best dialogue with him. And again, just like Homecoming, remember when Tony says, I wanted you to be better than me?
Yes.
When he says, no, you're stronger. And then it kind of reruns the line of, what are you the god of again? And then the lightning coming out of nowhere with no hammer and that entire blast. Yep. And then the visual of that slow motion of him flying down there and all the troops like stacking on top of each other. And then he just kicks their butt for like 45 seconds with Immigrant Song. It just doesn't get better.
No.
That's like cinematic gold. I mean, it really is.
I won't fight you.
I'm so emotionally moved, so fired up to like fight alongside Thor, right? All at once. I'm feeling everything in one 2-minute scene. Sorry, done. And again, I think we voted Thor's entrance into Wakanda as the greatest chills-inducing moment in our power rankings thing, which again, there's four scenes that are like up there for me, but this one's just longer. You know, you get more stuff there.
Yeah.
It's just so good. I'm not going to argue that. It's just so good.
Well, but Kyle, like you say about the movies, if someone were to say this was their favorite moment, you're not going to fight me. Like, I'm not going
to
fight you.
Right, I'm not going to fight. Yeah, right.
On this moment, if you said, no, I think it edges out the other ones, I'll be like, okay,
the visual paired with the song. Are you kidding me? Do you guys remember where you were when you saw it the first time in theaters? I mean, that was like a thing I'll never forget.
This scene is just, it's just peak goodness. Like, I just don't, you're right. Like, I can't think of a single scene that is as well executed. And just like the blend of the emotion and I mean, I think where...
And just the raw power, yes, which you know I love. I mean, just the sheer power.
That's the thing is it's just like, I don't know that there's another scene. And I think we can fight some about whether Guardians or Ragnarok does this better. But the blend of the vulnerability and then the sheer power is so well done. To just like really get you going. And I oh man, it's something.
It gets me going. And you know what? I didn't read comics. I always clarify that. But I say that to say, I didn't know Thor could have power outside of his hammer. This whole time as a viewer, I just thought Thor's power is his hammer. I mean, he's strong and all that, but this is kind of was such a cool twist to me to see, holy cow, no hammer. This is still what he's like. The power's in him, not in the hammer. Oh!
And as a non-comics person myself, I wouldn't describe it like with Loki, we'll say that his powers, I would even say, are a little squirrely. Thor's I wouldn't call confusing or squirrely. I would just say, I don't know that I ever knew the extent of Thor's powers, or I always kind of felt like, wait, isn't he stronger than that? Or is he, what can he do?
Yep.
What can he do within kind of the whole lightning realm? And I like how in this film we do get, that's actually a place in the movie where they draw a line and make a huge like turning point.
Yes. Oh, and Kyle, guys, this is just transitioning for me better than I ever could have imagined. Cause Robbie knows this. I have one other nitpick with the movie. And again, it's unbelievable. My audience at this point knows how much I'm obsessed with power levels. I feel like this movie I'm doing the tiniest sliver amount of my fingers right now, messes with the power levels that I'm led to believe. It a little bit, I feel like, breaks the rules. Let me give you some examples. Like you were saying, I don't 100% know the extent of Thor's power. Like, I know the extent of Captain America's power. You know what I'm saying? At this point. I know the extent of Hawkeye's power at this point. But with Thor and in this movie, Hela, who I love with all my heart, there's a couple scenes where I just don't know if they maybe did something that a little bit crossed the line as far as what am I led to believe can or cannot happen to this person. So like I've brought up to Robbie, like when Hulk does a 300-foot Hulk smash into Thor's head, and that has almost no ramifications on him. Am I just led to believe that Thor's invincible? I'm not being funny. I just, at that point, I'm like,
right.
I don't know. Did they need to include that bit? Like when Hela takes down the entire army, again, visually unbelievable, but she takes down the entire army of Asgard, which are already a strong race of people, and their ships in like 20 seconds by throwing unlimited amount of knives. I just don't understand where the levels always fit. Is that fair? Go ahead, roast me.
I think I compartmentalize easier than that. So for me, I would even maybe even just have a clear answer. To me, you have gods where they're like Hela and Thor. There's a level of, it's not obviously immortality, but it's a power level where Thor can get hit by, if you think of Thor and Hulk, it's a physical power. So Thor and Hulk could literally just take a beating all day and maybe just show bruising. But then
okay,
when
I
you get
that.
Thor
up
that. Against, when you get Thor up against Hela, now we're on the same level, if not more so, because she's even by the story, we're told how powerful she is, especially
right.
when she's on
she's
Asgard.
She's the goddess of death.
And I like how they demonstrated that for us. So she slices his eye out and like, you know, beats him up. You know, they're still somewhat even because they're both gods, but that fits. So Thor and Hulk fits for me. Hela and Thor fits for me. And then,
okay, would both of them lose to Thanos with no stones?
Well, we're getting into a longer discussion. I don't want to like tease. If we can we talk about Infinity War?
No, I'm just saying, like, I'm trying to figure out exactly okay. where everyone stands. You know what I mean? Because I want to know that there's
I
rules.
Think,
like,
again,
I
think for me, it is fairly clear where you, Kyle, you and I have talked about this, that Thanos, I had beef with Infinity War the first time when Nebula flies a necrocraft, which we've been told like is used for mining, could literally, they're like indestructible. And she hits him with a necrocraft flying full speed and he just gets up. And I'm like, what the heck is... And you reminded me that like, no, Thanos in this movie, we are meant to understand from the directors, from the story, he is one notch short of invincible, okay. immortal, omnipotent. You know, the only thing that would kill him is the Infinity Stones.
Okay, that's my thing. Robbie knows this. Like, I want the Infinity Stones to be the top of all this, right? No matter what. The Infinity
Correct.
Stones with anybody could beat anybody else. Where you just spoke a good word to me is that Hela is a god just like Thor. That's a good way for me to remember it. And I think, Robbie, you said something similar like that.
Yeah. And,
similar to that, correct?
And my point with Hela is that I think it's important to know that she is the goddess of death. I mean, they're hammering that in over and over again. So, I mean, I think it makes sense that, like, of any of the gods, she would have to be particularly great at killing people.
that's very fair.
No doubt. If she struggled, we would kind of wonder, like, man, right. You weren't very good at your job.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So I think then that perfectly segues to me. We're talking about power levels. What actually ends up killing Hela in the end is Surtur coming back. And I just, to bring it all back together, Taika's influence on the film, the power level, the story. as we said, you think of Hela as the villain, and she is. And yet the whole purpose at the beginning of the movie is, and remember, Taika kind of hides this a little bit where Surtur is kind of waxing on, you know, the prophecy is about to happen. And then Thor,
yes.
I promise I'm not doing this. what does he say? He's like, I feel like we're really connecting.
Really connecting there, yeah.
But Taika almost kind of hides it for a second. Like you get pulled out of the moment with humor. But I love how they finish the movie where in reality, and Thor says it, this wasn't about stopping Ragnarok. It was about causing it.
Right.
Yeah.
And ending Asgard. Asgard is a people. All the themes kind of tie in. And then, yeah, you do get Surtur where Hela's looking up just like, oh, it's kind of her like, oh, crap moment. And she's done. And the shot of Hulk flying in like, no, Hulk,
yeah.
Yes. What are you doing?
Yep.
The slow-mo is so, so dope.
That is
an underrated
twist.
I love that ending to the film. And yeah, right. A little bit of a twist to what we thought the villain was. Like, remember trailers. It was all the trailers had Thor flying into Surtur.
Yeah, true.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
not that we hadn't seen
yeah.
Hela, but I think we didn't actually know how that was going to play out. And I just thought that was such a perfect end to the film. And then obviously transition to Infinity War.
Oh, yes. The post-credits scene, by the way. And I also wanted to say, while you were saying that, I was so tempted to chime in with Asperg. or wherever you're going, which is what Jeff Goldblum says, instead of Asgard, wherever. Yes, guys, the post-credit scene, come on. I think it's so cool to see, just again, the context reminding us of, yes, more chills, what's about to happen. Jeez. But also, guys, Thor's been through so much. I mean, he doesn't even get a break. He's been on the ship for, what, a day? And then Thanos pulls up, and we get Infinity War. He just really can't
get a break. Well, I also think there's crazy. There's something kind of cool about the way, at the start of this movie, Thor recognizes what he was doing the last time we saw him at the end of Age of Ultron. Like, he was going to go off and look for the Infinity Stones. And he's basically like, oh, you know, I looked for them. I couldn't find them. And I started having these visions of Ragnarok and wound up here. And so it's sort of like he, you know, just set that quest aside and has been dealing with all this other stuff. And then, like, as soon as like, he has finally, to the, you know, I guess, dealt with this, even though Asgard's now destroyed, or the place that was Asgard is now destroyed, like, guess what? Like, the Infinity Stone thing is coming right back to bite him, like, front and center in this very ominous way. And I just think that's so cool.
Right. And what a crazy little Easter egg, by the way, that we get Loki walking by the Tesseract, but they don't show him grab it.
Right.
Yep.
Just, again, it's some foreshadowing joke there. He's the god of mischief. He's always up to something. So he's probably going to grab that sucker. Okay, guys, this has been, again, just so much fun. This whole podcast has been fun, but this is about as much fun as I ever have doing anything ever. I texted Robbie when I finished this movie. Wow, what a stunning, astonishing, stunning film.
Yep.
That's how excited I was about it. It's true. So I'll let you guys rank it first, and then I'll finish her off. Okay?
Well, yeah, let's start with Kyle as the guest of honor here.
Okay. Robbie, I feel like you're always trying to pass off the ranking.
Yeah,
the
it's more, true.
No, I'm giving you a hard time.
Here we go. Roasting Robbie about his rankings again.
Look, I don't like to be nailed down, all right?
So this was a real battle for me. And listening to y'all's homecoming episode, I think I did something similar where my scores, I kind of let my scores stop dictating my rankings, because at the end of the day, my rankings list is just going to be the movie next to it above and below. And so I kind of throw the score out and I say, is this movie better than the other? Whereas the score is more just measured in isolation. So as I look at my rankings, I have, this was a fight for me with some older movies. And so I don't want to be guilty. If you guys could speak into this, I don't want it to be recency bias, but for me, Thor Ragnarok jumped from 8 to 6 because it jumped the original Avengers and Iron Man.
Wow.
Which for me are two pillar MCU films. Like those have been in my top 10 list, obviously now for 10 years. And so I see Thor Ragnarok and I'm like, there's no way I can rank it higher. And yet when I look at all 22 films, I do. I end up with Thor Ragnarok is at 6, and then it just pushes Iron Man to 7, Avengers to 8.
So I know
does that make sense, what I'm saying?
That makes 100% sense. I think you're not realizing how low that's going to be compared to Robbie and I. That's my guess.
Okay, sure.
Rob, you go.
Yeah, I mean, first off, I definitely understand how, again, once we get up to these top movies, it's just hard. Like, how do you balance Thor Ragnarok against the Avengers in terms of kind of significance to the franchise? And Iron Man is sort of the same thing. But for me, gosh, like, I love everything about this movie. Like I said, it is the funniest movie, but it also has some of the more emotional moments. My wife will say that I have a very real crush on Chris Hemsworth. So there's just like nothing,
understandably,
nothing that I don't get from this movie. So, and this may be crazy, this movie ranks number 3 out of 22 for me in the MCU.
So, Robbie, it sounds like you have a pretty special and intimate relationship with this movie.
Yeah, you were waiting to get that in there. Yeah, exactly.
I really was. And I don't even do the best accent, but I had to try.
I love it. I love it. Okay, so for me, if you're going to get in the top 5 territory, the movie has to virtually be perfect. And I struggle with my top 5 basically saying, it could probably change on any given day to whoever's watching it. Like, if I was recommending this movie to somebody, it might be different to a different person if you're in my top 5. For me, this movie is virtually flawless. Like you said, I get everything I've ever wanted from a movie. It's so funny. It is the funniest movie, but it also has some of the coolest action, some of the coolest visual, and it has some of the biggest heart moments in the entire thing. And I think I get the most stand up and cheer moment ever in this film. But if I had to compare it to the top five, like I said, the power levels thing occasionally gets on my case, and there's two jokes. Again, we're talking top five, so give me a break. But I don't think Guardians has anything that ever is out of place. So I'm rating this movie a 96% fourth. I'm going to put Guardians one spot ahead of it. I just spent all night last night thinking about those two movies, three and four. And in some ways, I don't know which movie I would show if you want to prove the most standalone film, but still, I don't have a single complaint about Guardians. Even though maybe it doesn't do all those things I just said quite as well, I don't have any time I'm ever pulled out, and this movie has two little times and a couple little things, so fourth for me.
So then, Kyle, are you Homecoming, Winter Soldier, five and six?
I love that you're asking that, because Robbie and I are just about to release an entire rankings episode to kind of catch people up with where we're at, because it's been very confusing to this point, and we've moved it around and all that.
Because I feel what I'm hearing is, you know, what I'm hearing is one and two are very similar for most of us. And
I think so.
And then three through six is where it's the same movies that are just slightly flipped around.
Yeah.
And again, I'll do this more in depth later, but I can't wait to get into it.
Cool. I can't wait. Well, this has been fun, guys.
Kyle, as always, gosh, it's such a, I mean, we got educated today from you. We just got educated.
That's true. Man, you really, you brought the preaching today.
I'm just the vessel. It's been an honor.
As always, guys, thank you so much for listening. If you're enjoying this rewatch, or even if you're late to the rewatch, it's not too late. You still have a week before Loki. So go back, watch those movies, listen to our Monday episode on Thor and the Avengers, listen to our Tuesday episode on Thor the Dark World, and then thank you for listening today to our Thor Ragnarok edition. But stay tuned, because tomorrow is going to be super, super fun, where Robbie and I will be talking about Infinity War and Endgame and Loki's role in that, but also playing a portion of the Matthew Berry episode that we record with him, because he was on set, guys. It's pretty dope. So we'll see you tomorrow on Friends from Work.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.